Come on, so let's try to quickly hazard what we said last week, if not, but I still remember what it was. Let's say as follows. There is a question that is raised as far as what is the purpose of Shalach Manos. And the context of the question was, why does the Ramah rule that if one offers Shalach Manos to somebody else, and that person is Meichel, the Ramah rules you Yotze. And that's a big chiddush. How do you know that it's not only that you accomplish Shalach Manos if you actually send it, but even if you offer it up to someone who doesn't accept it, you also find yourself in fulfillment. And Chassam Sofer considered this question and discovered in his research that there are two opinions as to what Shalach Manos is meant to accomplish. On the one hand, there was a Trumas Hadeshin that is there to help for the Suda. On the other hand, there was a Maas Halevi that is there to make friends. And his suggestion was that the Psak should depend on that, that if it's there to make friends, so then the Ramah is correct that it's the thought that counts. And if it's there to help with the Suda, so then it doesn't make sense to say that it should be subject to Mechila, because then the whole institution is going to fall apart, that people who need it are not going to want to admit that they need it, they're not going to take it, and the whole goal is not going to be accomplished. And then we mentioned that this set the pattern for all future discussions of Shalach Manos, the assumption that it's somehow related to the issue of the Manos Levi and the Trumas Hadeshen is an inviolable rule of all future discussions of Shalach Manos, and that the Chassam Sofer himself continued this discussion by noting that the Ramah rules that women are obligated in Shalach Manos, apparently including married women who are Somech al Shulchan Balehem, who are not supporting themselves, and that might be a chiddush, so that apparently is also l'shitaso, that if one assumes that it's for the purpose of a suda, so then one could have made the case that maybe somebody who doesn't provide their own suda, but is dependent on somebody else, wouldn't be obligated. But if it's about making friends, so then presumably there wouldn't be any distinction, and women and married women and everyone else should be obligated equally. And therefore the Ramah is apparently l'shitaso, the same Ramah who believes that it's about making friends, is therefore also going to believe that it's applicable equally to married women and others who are Samech al Shulchan Acher. We then moved on to talk about the question of whether there is a halacha of shlichus, an issue discussed by Binyan Sion and others. Among the relevant issue is the question of some of the questions, first of all, is to establish that it's not, presumably not halachic shlichus, as Dvaravam points out. We're not talking about something that fits into the normal category of shlichus al kamoso, as evidenced by the fact that if that were the case, then we would require that it be possible to do yourself. And to say that it should specifically be done through shlichus, that's not really something we find in the halachas of shlichus. And also, the people who do use messengers for the shalach manas don't have any faith to use somebody who's chayav in the mitzvah. They'll use children, or they'll use non-Jews, or mailmen. So all of this seems to indicate that we're not talking about halachic shlichus. And nonetheless, there is a discussion, and even those who brought it up, like the Binyan Sion, seem to conclude it's not really necessary. So our instinct was first to say that this is probably independent of the whole Manos Halevi Trumas Hadeshen issue. But then we mentioned that the Satmar Rav and his Trumas Divriyol does connect the two, that perhaps there's more chibah v'reis when you use somebody else in between because it shows more forethought, as opposed to if you do it directly, it could just be just ran into him in the street and it doesn't really show much intent. While if it's about the su'udas, then the chanami shouldn't really matter so much. And I think we discussed also the one who's most justified in following the Chassam Sofer's path, the Chassam Nechtav Sofer, who discussed the issue of anonymous shalach manos. Again, we don't recommend doing that, leaving unmarked boxes outside of people's houses. But he did suggest that the issue should depend accordingly, and probably is a good example of one issue that really would take us in two different directions. That if the issue is to make friends, then perhaps it's not sufficient. If there's not going to be any, direct connection to anybody, no one's going to know who it comes from. So that's not going to accomplish much in making friends. Even though one could have said, maybe the idea is to make friends with Klal Yisrael, to have a positive atmosphere towards all the Jewish people. So apparently that's not enough. Apparently we're looking to create a connection with one specific set of people. But if the issue is that it should be for the purposes of tzedakah, so then we know the Rambam gives all these levels to tzedakah, and a very high level is when you give anonymously. So maybe it's even better to give without any identification. And I think we also mentioned the issue of children, giving shalachmanas to children, and we just noted the interesting quirk here that we have Svarim to talk about this and apply, again, we have to all agree that the issue was Amanas Levi and the Trumas Hadeshin, but they apply it in different directions. That some say that if the issue is making friends, also it's not shaykh and adults can be friends with a child, doesn't really work that way. If the issue is Suda, so the child's also a part of the family Suda, while some say Faker. If the issue is Suda, so a child's not chayav mitzvah, it's not chayav in the Suda either. But if the issue is making friends, yeah, sure, we can all be friends. Okay, is that about what we got up to last week?
Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay, so then let's continue with a few more points about this. So one very important issue that really we should start off with, and it's a reflection of the Rambam Lishitaso. So we see that so far we have a consistent path, at least twice, of the Rambam apparently making rulings that reflect a Manos Halevi kind of view. I reflect the idea that it's about engendering positive feelings of friendship. So that's consistent with another ruling that the Rambam has, that the Rambam rules that you have to make sure that when you send the Shalach Manas, you have to be careful about when they get there. That you have to make sure that they get there not just on Purim, as opposed to before Purim, but it's not enough that it has to be on Purim, it has to be during the day on Purim. So we know Purim, I don't know if we addressed this last week or not, Purim is contrasted with all the other Yom Tovim, and most prominently with Pesach that comes a month later. Pesach, we have this tremendous focus on the night. Pesach night is everything. And when it comes to Purim, all the mitzvahs are really during the day. And even Megillah, which is read at night, is apparently really in a secondary type of way, and maybe we'll talk about that next week if we have time depending. But really the focus of the mitzvahs is all in the daytime. So that being the case, the Ramah says that the Shalach Manas has to get there during the day. Now this is really reflecting his position in this whole issue. Because if it's about the Suda, so then let it get there the day before. Let it get there any time before, as long as it's on Purim, as long as it's within enough proximity for the Suda for it to be useful. The idea that it has to specifically get there on Purim itself, that seems to be addressing a belief that the receipt of the Shalach Manas has to take place on Purim, because that's when people are happy, all the people resent me, and that has to happen on Purim itself. And if it happens the day before, so it's very nice and wonderful, and have friends all the time, but it's not the mitzvah of Purim. And that affects a number of other issues as well, because especially if you live in Eretz Yisrael and people observing Purim the 14th, the 15th, back and forth, so you have to then take this into mind and take this into consideration that when it's going to be sent, there's a long Gehetev about this, the Shari Tshuva is a big discussion in the Nasi Kalim and the Shulchan Aruch about working out these timing issues, which seems to reflect, again, if you're focused on it being received on Purim, seems to reflect a Manas Halevi type view, which apparently is the understanding of the Rama. But it would seem that everyone would agree that it's got to get there at least before Purim's over. After Purim's over, it doesn't seem to really be much point. However, there is a tshuva of the Kajik Lava Rav, who, in addition to his creative analysis, he's always looking to be Melamed Zchus and Klal Yisrael. So the Kajik Lava Rav discusses the fact that very often, perhaps you'll see people on Purim afternoon driving around the Shalach Manas, and not only Purim afternoon, but they'll keep going even after it's already nighttime, after it's already Shushan Purim. So what's the point in that? What are they accomplishing? The Kajik Lava Rav thought maybe there was something they could be accomplishing. That the minhag of Klal Yisrael seems to be, and perhaps his justification for this, that the assumption is that even though the Purim Suda has to be during Purim day, that if it starts during the daytime and it carries into the night, that that's also a fulfillment of the Suda. That's acceptable. So if that's the case, so then perhaps it emerges that if the Suda is still going on into the night of following Purim. So, and that still counts as a Purim Suda. So if Shalach Manas is there to help with the Suda, which from a Sadashim point of view, so then that perhaps can be accomplished even during this time after Purim, and maybe that's Ali Mizchus, maybe that could explain what exactly is being accomplished by those who would be delivering Shalach Manas at that point. Of course, from the Ramah's point of view, it wouldn't necessarily accomplish so much.
According to the Manos lady, the whole friendship idea, how come that can't be done before Purim or after Purim?
You can be if you want to just make friends, but if you want to do the mitzvah of Purim, so the time of the mitzvah of Shalach Manas is that you should make friends on Purim.
And why is it Dafka Bo Bayom as opposed to Balel?
Because all the mitzvahs of Purim are during the daytime. Yeah, that's the that seems to be an interesting aspect of Purim itself. And maybe if we talk about Megillah next week, we'll see which Purim topic we'll talk about. But if we talk about Megillah, maybe we'll look into that a little bit more. But that itself is a pattern that we see throughout the program.
You have to deliver the Shalach Manas during the day, or if you deliver that before, they have to use it during the day?
Also, that's the point. It has to be received during the day. But if you want to take it from a Sedeshan kind of view, so then whenever they use it, but you can't really control when they use it, so you have to give them the opportunity to use it. So that would be fine. But the Ramah's ruling seems to follow a Trumei Manas Alevi type of view, because the Ramah says it has to be received on Purim.
How about do not open until Purim?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sternbach talks about that, but it's probably not going to help so much. The idea is when he gets a gift, he says, oh, how nice. So when's he going to say, oh, how nice? He's going to say, how nice on Purim. That's what you're trying to accomplish. So that's presumably what's going on. There is a ruling the Rama also has that you shouldn't send a Shalach Manas to an Avel. An Avel is chayiv to send out Shalach Manas, but he's not supposed to receive Shalach Manas. So why not? So someone will explain that this is based on the Trumas Hadeshin, and that the idea is that it will have, because it's connected to the Suda, so it's as if now you're sharing the Suda, and it becomes like a Sudas Mereis. An interesting idea. But others suggest that no, it's not about that, and besides what we've been saying this whole time, that the Ramah doesn't follow the Trumas Hadeshin, and Ramah follows the Manos Halevi. So therefore, maybe the idea is that it's actually an expression of Sheila Shal. And maybe that's the concern. What's the shear for Shalach Manas? So in terms of how much Shalach Manas to send, so we know that's a well-known halacha, that we're medayik in the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Mishloach Manos Ish L'Rieihu. So Manos, two gifts. Yishriyehu to one person, that's the minimum of Shalach Manas. But what do the gifts have to be? What do they have to be? How do they have to be evaluated? So first of all, there is machlokas among the poskim. Is there a minimum quantification? And the machlokas is whether it should be a kezayis or whether it should be a shavapruta. And that perhaps also reflects these two possibilities, that a kezayis is a shirin achila. So if the idea is that it's there for the Suda, so maybe we're trying to measure that it should be something that it should be something that's significant as far as eating is concerned. But if the idea is it's there to make friends with, so then maybe we'll measure it by a Hana standard. So Shavakuta is a way of quantifying Hana. But beyond that, it could be there's a subjective factor also. And there is a comment that the Ritva has in his commentary to Maseches Megillah on Daf Zayin, where the Ritva suggests that if you send a small gift to a very wealthy person, or vice versa, the Ritva says that's not going to be sufficient. And presumably the idea is that if you're going to send Mayor Bloomberg a Diet Pepsi and a bag of pretzels, so he's not going to notice, it's not going to reach his attention. So even though it might be something you can throw in the Suda, but it's not going to impress him, and if it's not going to impress him, so maybe that's not going to accomplish in a Manos Halevi type of sense, it's not going to accomplish the goal of Shalach Manas. And vice versa, if he wants to send you a very small gift, you'll think this guy's got so many billions he could send me a much nicer gift, if this is all he's going to send me, so then that's not going to have too much of an impact on me. So this whole notion that it's not just that it's got to be useful in some sense, but that it's got to impress you, that seems to be following a Trumas Hadeshin kind of view as well.
As I said, it seems very stock-oriented.
Unless, so the impression that most have is it's the opposite, that if it's, what are you saying, sukkah oriented because we're excluding
usher, it? You have to give an usher if he eats.
Well, we normally don't, like Dei Matzah, you're saying that if the usher becomes poor. But normally, when an usher is an usher, you normally don't have to give him anything at all. So the idea that you're giving him at all isn't really stuck a sounding. So the focus here seems to be not that you have to give it to people who need it, but that whoever you're giving it to, you have to impress them. So if it's something so small that you're not going to impress the wealthy guy with it, or if it's coming from the wealthy guy and he giving you something small is going to be so clearly beneath what he's capable of, that you're not going to be impressed. So all of that perhaps falls short from a really from a Trumas Hadeshim kind of view.
Doesn't fall short for friendship also? Like
that is the truth. I'm sorry, I didn't say Manaslevi. Okay. I just said, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, Manaslevi. So that's so this Ritva and the whole logic that comes out of it, we've discussed in a number of other sources. For example, there is a discussion. Maram Shik and others have a discussion. Let's say you have something in your house, whatever it is, it's a Asur B'Hanah Midrabanan. I don't know what that's going to be exactly, but maybe Chametz Shavuot Pesach, maybe Chametz Asur B'Hanah Midrabanan. It's Machlokas. Okay, well, something like that. It's already also stale probably, it's now 11 months old, but whatever it is, you have something in your house that's Asur B'Hanah Midrabanan. So, the truth is, a chola can use something that's asr b'hanah midrabanan. So maybe you'll think, okay, I got a friend who's a chola. So I have this stuff in my house that's asr b'hanah midrabanan, so I can't use this. I'll send a shachmanis to this guy. I'll write him a little hesber, a special hashkacha, asr b'hanah midrabanan, mutav chola. And so he'll receive this. I don't think he's going to be too impressed. He's going to say, okay, he couldn't eat it, so he gave it to me. So, as Ma'am Shik and others discuss, this, as far as making friends, is questionable whether it's going to accomplish anything. Along similar lines, Rizhulti has a piece in his Mishnah Seivitz where he talks about the question of would we ever apply a concept of kfiyah to Shalach Manas. So we know there are some mitzvahs, as the Gemara tells us in Suvas. There are some times when Beis Din steps in to compel the observance of a mitzvah. So would you compel Shalach Manas? So here also, this could take us in different directions depending on how you go. Because if this is a staka type mitzvah, so we know from the Gemara Tzuvos and the Bava Basra that there is a role sometimes for kfiyah when it comes to staka. And sometimes somebody is not fulfilling his obligation in the realm of staka, so sometimes Beis Din will step in and do something about that. Well, if it's about making friends, so then it's hard to imagine that when you show up at the guy's door with two U.S. Marshals on either side of you, clearly compelling you with a warrant for Shalach Manas, it's not going to really impress the guy too much. So that's questionable also, whether that's going to accomplish anything in that sense. There is a discussion that some of the Svarim have that maybe you could perhaps be yotzei with Divrei Torah. That perhaps if you send around Divrei Torah, maybe that's also going to accomplish Shalach Manas. So the truth is, this actually relates to both stuff. On the one hand, there is an idea sometimes that Torah can work as food. You've probably heard the idea that some have that maybe you could learn Torah Shabbos afternoon instead of Shal Shudas, which Chaim had the famous comment. He thinks it's not a good idea because maybe somebody will slug up your Dvar Torah and you won't have anything, but you can't slug up a piece of gefilte fish, it's safer. So you have that idea, but really this is more following from a Sadeshan type of mold. Yeah, maybe if the idea is you're trying to spread simcha, friendship, so what better bond of friendship than sharing the Dvar Torah? Sorry? Right. Can I take it from a Sadeshan? Sorry, it's tired. It's tired of me. So this follows the Manas Halevi kind of idea that it's about making friends. Maybe that's true. And there's an interesting Lashitaso that may develop from following that, because as we've been saying the whole time, the Ramah follows the Manas Halevi perhaps. So it's possible that both the Manas Halevi and the Ramah actually did this, actually wrote Svarim for the purposes of sending out as Shalach Manas. The Manas Halevi itself, I believe, may have been written to be sent out as Shalach Manas. And the Ramah also wrote a sefer like that, a fascinating sefer, which I used to have a copy of, and I can't find anymore. A sefer called, that's interesting, actually, you should check now, put it online. The sefer called Mechir Yayin. It was written by the Rambam, where he darshans every word of Megillas Esther.
Is he passing like that, or is he...
So he doesn't discuss it, but it seems to be that just the Maisa Rav, that perhaps it's an interesting reality that maybe they both did this as a reflection of the Shitasim, consistent with their views.
Right.
Both the Trumas Hadeshin and the Ramah seem to have written Sfarim that they sent out as Shalach Manas, which would be consistent with their team's position, that it's about making friends. Say from Shpatach Eliyankov, on the other hand, writes he thinks the whole discussion is a Purim joke. There's no way that that's really true. I believe he says that about something else also, because discussions some Sfarim have, that maybe you shouldn't be able to send Shalach Manas to your Rebbe, because Pasuk says Ishna Reyehu, so sometimes we find that the Rebbe is not considered to be Reyehu. I'll respond to that. So you'll say also that if you're into the Parsha Mishpatim topic, so if you're sure it's going to gore the ox of your Rebbe, so you'll be Pater also, you got sure Reyes. The word means different things in different contexts, and we wouldn't necessarily worry about it here. Yes?
Sorry, I brought it up, but who says you could give a Shabbat with the
Divrei
Torah?
There are some forums to talk about it. I'll show you. Maybe the Chuvah is the Divrei Yisrael. Sounds logical. I think Judas to be Israel talks about it and comes out on that. And again, the Mishpatach Eliyankov thinks it's not even really a serious discussion. So there is also a lengthy discussion many Sfarim have about the question of why is there no bracha recited on the Shalach Manas. So,
that's,
sorry?
There's no bracha on
stuff. Oh, so that's where things get kind of complicated. So, as you may be familiar, if you discuss Shalach Manas, or if you discuss brachos on mitzvos, so anytime you discuss brachos on mitzvos, so there's a checklist of sources you turn to first. Right? So if you want to know why there's no bracha on a mitzvah, on any specific mitzvah, so the first item on your list is you check it in with the Tshuvas HaRashba. You see if that works. The Tshuvas HaRashba in Siman Yud Ches has a lengthy discussion about brachos on mitzvos in general. And the most well-known point that he says in that tshuva is that there's no bracha on a mitzvah like staka because it's problematic. Now, he may not mean this, but it's a little bit of a question whether this is exactly what he means, but this is how he's been interpreted. That if you're going to give staka and try to make a bracha on it, so it could happen that you'll make a bracha, and then the guy's not going to want to accept the staka. So you'll be left hanging. We have bracha levatala. You may have heard that joke about the brisker who was walking around Eretz Yisrael and an Arab came over and wanted to kill him. And so he said, first I want to make a bracha. And he made a bracha, Asher Kudshan, Slays of Tzivanu, Al Kiddush Hashem. And the Arab got so freaked out that he ran away. So then the brisker ran after him and said, he's leaving me hanging. So maybe that's why we wouldn't have a bracha in such a case. That's the way it sounds like the Rashba means. That if there's a chance the guy's going to leave you hanging, so then you're not going to make a bracha. So they point out, so hold on a second, the Ramah pulled the rug under that one. Pulled the rug out from under that one. Because according to the Ramah, if the person says no, you're still Yotze. So maybe the Rashba's logic doesn't work here. Now the truth is you could argue on that, because the Ramah doesn't say it across the board that if the person says no, you're Yotze. Because if the guy throws it back in your face and says, no way I'm ever making friends with you, get out of my house. So it's not so clear the Ramah would say you're okay with that. The Ramah's talking about a situation where he's mindful, where he says, oh, thank you, I appreciate it, but I don't need it. So it's not necessarily obvious that that's going to apply in all cases, but okay, let's assume that the Rashba is not a sufficient answer to this. Although, again, there are those who just read the Rashba, like the Rambam seems to say, that in general, there's no bracha on mitzvahs ben adam l'chaver. Whether it's because, really, of that concern of actual... hangage leaving, or whether it's because of just a general rule, it's a little bit of a discussion. But let's assume the Rashba is not an adequate answer then. So, item two on your checklist, and if you want to figure out why a mitzvah is a bracha, if the Rashba is not the answer, so then the next source that's often turned to is the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef in Hilchos Pesach and Taf Lamed Beis, the Beis Yosef discusses why we don't have a bracha on Bittul Chametz. The bracha that we make is on Bir Chametz. Why not on Bittul Chametz? So the Beis Yosef says that Bittul Chametz takes place balev, takes place in the heart, and anything that takes place balev doesn't get a bracha. So some want to suggest that here too, that if the whole point of the mitzvah is to engender a certain feeling balev, So the Kriya Yitzhon Grey, so then that's something that's not going to be subject to a bracha because it's belated. There are many, many other approaches to this question. I just mentioned another descendant of the Yitzhon Sofer, the Das Sofer, has a tshuva about this, in which he says something along the lines of the following, that if we take a Trumas Hadeshen point of view, this time I mean to say Trumas Hadeshen, if you say that it's about Tzedakah, so what that really means is that essentially we have two mitzvahs of Purim that are about Tzedakah. We have Matanos Levyonin and we have Shalach Manos. So the difference between the two is that Matanos Levyonin is more overt Tzedakah, actual charity to people who obviously need it. The Evyonim is an extreme type of ani, somebody who clearly needs tzedakah. While if it's about helping with the Suda, so then that's more of a hidden tzedakah. It's not the same type of obvious tzedakah that you're giving to people who are real Evyonim. It's about people who are a little less obviously needy. It's a way of giving them tzedakah less overtly. So really, it's that they're the same type of mitzvah, but we try to blur that fact, and we try to have these two categories. So to have a bracha, which is going to have to identify really which mitzvah it is, that's going to undermine our whole purpose of trying to blur the similarities between Matanos Levyonim and Shalach Manos. It's an interesting suggestion. But somewhat more similar to what we said before, this Sri Aish, the Tshuva about this also, and he suggests, now going back to Manos Levi type of perspective, says that if we make a bracha, it's going to kind of undermine the whole point, because similar to what we said before from Rav Zolti, if you show up at your friend's door and you say that, hi, I have a gift for you, but hold on a second, blessed are you, God, who commanded me and ordered me and compelled me and forced me to give these Shalach Manos, so it's probably not going to go over so well. So therefore, it says in 3DH, it's going to undermine the whole goal, and therefore that's not recommended. Okay, you could really talk forever about nafkaminas of the Manos Levi and the Trumas Hadeshen, but maybe we'll stop there. We'll talk about drinking tonight or drinking next week.
Drinking both times.
I think. And then we'll speak a few minutes about it. We'll see how long it takes. But just will mention one closing vort about the Shalach Manos idea. That there is a discussion that Rav Nachum Zemba, it was a tremendous gong. Rabbi was lost in the Warsaw Ghetto, and most of his children were lost as well. We have little bits and pieces in a few smaller farm. And the result, Rabbi Warman, in one of his farm, quotes the following idea from Rav Nachum Zemba, that the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah and Daf Yud Daled, why is it that the Jews of that door, what did they do wrong that they should be deserving of such a threat that they almost got wiped out? What did they do wrong? So the Gemara has two possibilities. One possibility is that they should nehenu misudaso shalosa rasha, because they enjoyed the inappropriate suda of Achashverosh. And the other answer is mipnesha nishtachavu letzelem, as they bowed down to the idol that Haman used to wear. So that was also something that got them in trouble. So Rav Nachum Zemba suggests that the two reasons for Shalach Manos parallel these two reasons. That if the issue is that they partook in this inappropriate Suda, so then what's the punishment, what's the tikkun rather for that? The tikkun is they should partake in an appropriate Suda, and it's through the Shal Mitzvah, so the Suda's Purim is meant to accomplish that. So then that's the Shrimas Hadeshin, that Shalach Manos is there to enhance mitzvah of the Suda. While if the idea is that it's about Avodah Zarah, so how do you fix Avodah Zarah? So the Medrash says in Parashat Tzav that the Kadosh Baruch Hu declares Gadol HaShalom, Shalom is fantastic, that as far as the Jewish people are concerned, Afilu Avdei Avodah Zarah, Bisman Shehem Chabur Achas, even if they were Avdei Avodah Zarah, but if they make one big unit, so then I'll be Meichel them. So the Tikkun for Avodah Zarah is Achdus. So if we create bonds among the Jewish people and we create unity, so then it makes sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to forgive us, and that's the other reason, the Manos Halevi, that Shalach Manos is meant to affect that. Yes, sir?
Several questions. Do you have to give two separate brachos in your shacharis?
There are those who say like it's hard to necessarily see that as
sort.
Yeah, it's a way of identifying the two separate manos. I don't know. All right, so maybe we'll talk for a few minutes about drinking, and then we'll see how far we get, and we'll continue next week if we don't finish. There is a Gemara, Maseches Megillah, and Daf Zayin. The Gemara says that Chai Vinish L'Basumei Paraya Adol Yada Bein Ar Haman L'Baruch Mordechai, apparently telling us that a person is obligated to drink, that's what it sounds like it means, on Purim, until he can't tell the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai. Then the Gemara goes on to tell a story about something that happened in that context, that Rava and Rav Zeira had Purim suited together, and Rava got quite drunk, and he got up and he shechted Rav Zeira, and then he davened that he should get better, and he came back to life. If you look in the Marsha, he kind of brings the story back down to earth. He says he wasn't actually dead, he was just sick, and so he didn't come back to life, he just got better, but whatever it is, he walked out of there. So then the next year, so Rava tried to invite him again, and Rav Zeira said, you know, yeah, I got a thing. He said, I can't come. Lav kol shasas charish nisa, that you can't assume that it's going to be a miracle every year, and it's not a good idea. So this first part, the part about the chayiv inish, so this seems to reflect an obligation to drink until you can't tell what's going on. This idea of not being able to tell the difference between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, so the Taz and others explain that the idea is, this is two themes of Purim. There is the theme of the Ar Haman, which means we were saved from destruction, that the one who was trying to kill us was thwarted. But that's one level. The other level that we also want to thank Kadosh Baruch Hu for is that Mordechai is then elevated to great stature, and presumably the Jewish people as a whole are raised up. So we thank God for both, and so much so that we don't want there to be any interruption, any separation between the two. We acknowledge the whole package on Purim. So we shouldn't see any blurring, or we should see Dafka, we should blur the distinction between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai, that we thank Kadosh Baruch Hu for both Nisim together as one package. So do we mean blurring literally? Is that the idea that you should be so blurry vision, you don't know what's going on? So that's what it sounds like. The Magen Avraham says that maybe means you shouldn't be able to tell that the gematrias are equal. That the gematria between Ar Haman and Baruch Mordechai are equal to each other, which apparently is the case. I read a story in one of the Sfarim of Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. They relate about Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. I think the story was that one Purim he had been drinking, and then he got up to daven for the Amid, daven Mincha, and somebody didn't want to let him daven for the Amid because they thought he was drinking so much he's not capable of davening properly. So this individual davened instead, and the guy who did get up there to daven, so he messed up. He said, Mashu Paruach, Omarid Hatal. And the only one who noticed that he messed up was Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, who then pointed out that the gematria of Chayiv Inish L'Basum V'Ra'ay Ad L'Yodim Baruch Mordechai L'Ar Haman is equal to the gematria of Mashiv Haruach Amor HaGashem Mashiv Haruach Amor HaTal. I didn't check the math. Feel free, if you're bored sometime, to see if that's true. That's what it says. So in any event, so that's what the Magen Avraham says, that the Indian is to mix things up so that you can't tell the difference. This idea of drinking, so it is brought in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch. It sounds like from the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch like it's a Din Masuda. That doesn't mean randomly you should be drinking all the time, but in the context of the Suda, you should have this going on. And therefore, that itself is important to note, so that's going to limit it to the day. Because as we said before, the mitzvahs of Purim, and the Gemara is explicit about the Suda specifically, have to take place during the daytime. Now, there is a minority view, the view of the Rav Yah, that there is a Chiyuv Suda at night also. But we shouldn't necessarily extrapolate from that there's anything to drink at night. As the Birkas Rafael suggests in a Sefer on Purim, that even according to Rav Yah, as the Bach emphasizes, the main Suda is during the daytime, which says you also have to have a Suda at night. So presumably the drinking concept is connected to the Iker Suda, so it doesn't mean that any Suda you have is going to have the drinking. and therefore he doesn't even think that the Rav Yoh would necessarily assume you have to be drinking at night. So there's probably no inyan whatsoever to drink at night. There, I did see the Sefer Merchas Machva, so I wanted to suggest that the focus is on the Kiyum here, the focus is on the Adlo Yodah. So maybe if one drank at night but was in a state of Adlo Yodah on Purim because of what he did the night before, maybe that's sufficient. I'm not recommending that, but from a Lundish perspective, that's what he wants to suggest. Is there a Kpeidish Vidavki Yayin? So some point out, the Rambam and Rashi both seem to focus on this phrase of Yayin specifically, but as the Merchat Rabbi points out in the Mukhi Arachayim and many other postkin took this view as well, that it's Ladavka and it doesn't necessarily have to be wine. So there is a Chakira that Rav Shmuel Salant had, and as we discussed in the Tzfas Emes, has one side of this as well, that he also, I believe, Shmuel Salant also asked this in relation to another phrase the Gemara has that sounds similar, a very different area of life. This idea of ad lo yada, perhaps is comparable to a very different area in Avelis. So we find that in Indian, one shouldn't shave ad shigar bo chavero, until his friend says, the lakar will want to shave. So in both his cases, ad lo yada and ad shigar bo chavero, so one could be chaker. What does this ad mean? Is this a sheer kium? Is it trying to say that this is something to accomplish? That you have a goal to get to that stage, and then you've fulfilled what you need to do? Or is it a sheer p'tur? That really, there's no inyan of reaching that stage. But if you do reach that stage, then you're p'tur. That stage is beyond where you have to go. So one who is at the state of Adol Yada is exempt from engaging in this practice. So nafkaminas would be, so if one is drinking the whole time, and doesn't reach Adlo Yada, so if it's a Shia Ptur, so it doesn't matter. Then you have no goal to get to there, it's just that if you did get to there, you'd be exempt. But the flip side would be if you did reach Adlo Yada, and then you took a nap, and now you woke up, and now you're feeling better, so maybe you gotta go back to the bottle, because maybe the idea is that that was just a Shia Ptur that exempts you, but you have to, once you're no longer in that state, so maybe you go back to it. So that's a little bit of a discussion. And you have the same two scenarios by Achigar Bo Chavero, and you find both approaches. Do you assume that it's just that really you shouldn't be shaving the whole year, and it's just that if you happen to be in a state where people are telling you you look horrible, so then you're exempt and you can shave and then you go back again to starting the whole process over again? Or is it that once you've reached that stage, you've accomplished this act of avelus, and then you're finished? So the same possibilities. So here, the Sfas Emes takes the view that really it's a sheer p'tur, that really it doesn't mean you have to reach that level. It just means that if you do, then you're exempt. And say for Emek Bracha, he quotes that Rabbi Yisrael Salanter had the same approach, and that he read that into the Rambam. But the Rambam says that the Simchat Purim means Sheyoichol Basar, etc., etc. Vishosa, it sounds like in the present tense, like, and you're drinking throughout. Not that there's a goal to drink something, but that to be in the state of drinking. So this sounds like a chumrah, though. It sounds like a media after they've been doing this all day. So the Brikas Rafal suggests that no, we still hold on to what we said before, that it's a din in the Suda. So therefore, means during the Suda, you have this continuous concept of drinking. And then if you get to Adlo Yada, then it doesn't apply anymore. But it still doesn't mean the rest of the day that this is always going to be something that you're obligated to do unless you're so completely blotto that you don't hop anything anymore. So that wouldn't necessarily be the case. There are, I think the Emek Bracha also maybe says a little differently than this whole Suda idea. The Suda, most assume that the Suda word is true. I think the Emek Bracha, the Sefer V'Atta Bracha Mecha Rabin that quotes this, if I remember correctly, that thought that maybe the Rambam was Davka saying the opposite, that maybe it's a Yoy Mishta the Simcha. Simcha is the Chiyuv Suda, and Mishta is the drinking. It's two separate ideas. That's less common interpretation. So this question of the Shir Kiyum and the Shir Ptur, I thought maybe you could say that it's totally on another issue, that there is a interesting discussion that the Shulchan Aruch rules that one is allowed to get married on Purim. And some of the Nosei Kalim, Lavush, and others asked him this, why should that be? You're not allowed to get married on Chol Hamoed Sukkot. You're not allowed to get married on Chol Hamoed Pesach. So you'll tell me, well, yeah, that's because that's a Simcha Daraisa and Purim is Rabbanan. So even if that's true, maybe it's not discussed last week, maybe Purim is viewed like a Daraisa, but even if you want to say that's true, okay, it should be also mid Rabbanan, like the Tshuva Sarashba writes, that there should be a Imarv and a level of Rabbanan. Why should we allow it according to the Shulchan Aruch? So one approach that some have is that there's a difference in the pasuk, that on Pesach the pasuk says "V'samachta b'chagecha," you have to feel joy in the day. So if you're feeling joy in something else, it's going to contrast or it's going to compete with the joy of the day. While on Purim it doesn't say "V'samachta b'Purim," it says it's a yom mishta v'simcha, a day in which you have simcha. So you can't have anti-simcha, you can't have hesbedim, and you can't have avelus and tainus. But, yeah, I do have avelus, I do have tainus. I'm not going to be so sure the simcha, but it can be simcha from other places. But there's another approach, a number of acharonim have, I think, except Sofer as a tshuva to this effect, where he says that the difference is that when it comes to Pesach or Sukkot or Shavuos, so there is simcha in every minute of the day. You can't find a minute of Pesach, even though you have the whole Chol HaMoed. You can't find a minute to get married in, because any minute you can get married is also a Tchi of Simchas Yontif. But when it comes to Purim, maybe it's not that there's Simcha in the day, but that it's a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah to be Mesameach on Purim. But in theory, you could fulfill that mitzvah and still have time left in the day. And therefore, maybe there's no contradiction. You can have your Sudas Purim Simcha in the morning, and then in the afternoon get married. So that presents two possibilities in what the simcha of Purim is. Is it more like the simcha of Yontif Minatara, where every minute of the day has inherent simcha? Or is it an act of simcha that has to take place on Purim? And that could, in theory, leave room for other things. So this question about the drinking, which is a subset of simcha, could be the same issue. That is it that every minute there is this concept, and it's just that if you're totally drunk, you're putter? Or is it that it's something to be Mekayim, and then once you reach a certain level, then you've fulfilled it, and then you can move on in life? So practically speaking, how do we relate to this whole concept? So it's a good question. So there are those who suggest, as the Rabbeinu Ephraim, as quoted by the Ran and the Baal HaMor and others, who say that really we don't paskin like this whole din. It's this whole concept of Chayiv Inish, Rabbeinu Ephraim says we don't paskin like. How do we know? Because right after the din of Chayiv Inish, the Gemara tells you the story about Rav and Rav Zera, which ended very badly. So what's that doing? That's a more dramatic way of saying, here's a halacha. No, it isn't. No, we reject it. So sometimes the Gemara just says, we don't fasten like that. In this case, the Gemara tells us a dramatic story of murder to make the point that it's not a good idea.
Can I just say the Gemara said that Rav Ashi didn't want to come back a second
time? Oh, that's the Pricharish, right? So Pricharish said if that was true, so how come Rav Zera didn't want to come back? He should say, okay, now we've gotten rid of the drinking, so now I can come back safely. So I don't totally understand, because one could argue that this happened, that they repealed it years later, that this was a consequence. But that's Pichadosh raises that question, the fact that he didn't come back shows that they were still drinking. The Chassam Sofer has a very creative terrors to that. I'll just say quickly, the Chassam Sofer, in the same tshuva about Shalach Manas, that's what links to that topic, in Kuf Tzad Yivav, he says that the issue is, he also defends the Pre-Chadish's point, but he also, in addition, gives us possible tariff that maybe we could say like this, that really there's a problem. Rav and Rav Zera perhaps shouldn't have been eating together in the first place. Because there is a question, what happens if Purim falls out on Shabbos? In Yerushalayim, that can happen, right? The 15th of Adar can fall out on Shabbos. So that's when you have a Purim Mishulash, you have this three-day Purim extravaganza. And the mitzvahs of Purim get divided up, some before, some after, some on, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday. So when does the Suda take place? That's a whole story. Yerushalmi says it shouldn't take place on Shabbos because it's not going to be clear that it's a Suda's Purim. It's going to be mixed in with a Suda Shabbos. You're not going to know that it's there for sake of Purim. So similarly, says the Chassam Sofer, there is an idea that when Talmid Chachamim get together, it's also a Chashuv of Suda's mitzvah. Maybe we should argue that Rav and Rav Zera shouldn't have been able to have Purim Suda together because it's not going to be nicker that it's a Purim Suda. So why was it okay? Because there's a Shinoi for Purim, because the drinking is involved. So the drinking will show you that it's not just a Suda's Talmid Chachamim, it's a Purim Suda. So Rav Zera was saying, so when you were drinking, that was the Hetzer for me to come because there was drinking going on. But now that we got rid of the drinking, because you killed me last year, so now I can't come, not because I'm afraid of that. Don't chas v'shalom think I'm bearing a grudge about that. I'm sort of, you know, it's old history, the whole killing me thing. But I'm worried, it sounds like a good excuse, I'm worried if that's the Talmid Chachamim, I'm going to have to go find somewhere else to go. So that's how that sounds. So for suggesting maybe to answer it up as a creative approach. Can you ask some questions on that? You know, why doesn't that work for Shabbos? Okay. So that's the attitude of the Rebbeinu Ephraim, that we don't paskin like this whole thing. The Bach understands Rebbeinu Ephraim to be saying that we still paskin that you should drink. He doesn't accept the Adwal Yadda part. The extreme aspect of it was rejected, but the concept of drinking still is there. The Ma'aril and others understand the concept to mean that it's not the kuva, it's not the chiyuv, it's an enhancement. It's recommended, but it's not actually required. And the Yad Ephraim, Gileonis in the Shulchan Aruch, says Adol Yada means you've gone too far. That you're supposed to enhance the meal with a positive lift. If you reach the stage of Adol Yada, that means you've missed it. You've gone too far, and then that's not right. So it's Ad V'lo Ad B'chlal. Chayav Adam B'sumi Paraya. Oh, but only Ad V'lo Yada. If he reaches Lo Yada, if he loses his perception of what's going on, so then that's very problematic. And many poskim accepted the Ramah. The Ramah writes that you should drink a little bit, more than you used to, and then sleep. And if you sleep, then you're not going to know the difference, and that's a fulfillment of Ad V'lo Yada. There is a Hakira some have, there's a sleeping a part of the concept. So meaning nafkamina, you have to sleep on Purim. What if you reach the stage on Purim, then you take a nap after Purim? So is it that you should reach the stage on Purim and the Yotze, or is it that the sleeping is the key on Liyad, and that's got to take place on Purim itself? Okay. But this Ramah has been widely accepted by a lot of poskim. And the Mishnah Berurah emphasizes that if by drinking you're going to come to be mezalzel in other mitzvahs, such as Netilas Yadayim or benching or the like, then that's for sure a reason not to be drinking at all. Although if I remember correctly, I think Rav Kook says, surprisingly has a tshuva not that way. And he says that if you miss davening because you're drunk in Purim, it's also the mitzvah, something like that, which is a surprising idea. That's not the way we normally assume. It's not the way we're going to emphasize here. That the Mishnah Berurah says in the Bir Halacha that if you're going to be mezalz on other mitzvahs, so then it's not shy. And it's also notable that Shulchan Aruch poskim paskin that if you're mazik somebody because you're drunk, if you're mazik somebody's property, so you're chayev. Even though minor hezek that comes out of a mutual celebration, that Ramah writes to be patur on Purim. But if you mazik somebody because you're drunk, that you don't see a patur for. So it also indicates that we're not so excited necessarily about being drunk and out of control. And therefore, it's probably kedai to emphasize b'zmanaz, there's a lot of sakanas involved in drinking and involved in giving free rein to this area, that it's really kedai to emphasize most the Ramah, if not the Rebbeinu Ephraim, is also who to rely on. And certainly no one ever said that this is Yahari Voyavor, so certainly anybody who's going to be involved in any kind of driving or any kind of access to anything dangerous, certainly no have to at all to be in a situation where you're where you are at all compromised in your das. I think if the Mishnah Berurah says you can't be mezalzel in Netilas Yadayim, you know, chamira sakanta meisura, there's no question they certainly are not allowed to be in a position where you're going to endanger anybody else or yourself in any way because of this concept, which you see there's definitely what to rely on to really emphasize the side of sobriety. At most, follow the Ramah, they drink a little bit and go to sleep. And even without that, it's questionable whether this is really a chiyuv at all, and it's questionable whether the whole concept was accepted. So there's enough sniffing the sarif here that one should be very, very careful about being involved in drinking ever, and even on Purim. Okay, so we will stop there. So that's Hashem, we'll find the Purim topic to for next week, probably topics of Kriyas and Megillah. Shkayach. Should tell.